This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour here in our nation's capital. It's the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. Programming note. Coming up in about a half hour or so, our pal Justin Mello from the Draft Network going to join us live out in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine. We get his thoughts on a couple of day two and day three guys that the Commanders could be interested in at a couple of key premium positions of need. Always, always love talking NFL draft. It is that time of year, man, where everyone's in Indy fraternizing, spilling the tea, trying to figure out what exactly is going to go down coming up here at the start of the league year. We talked to Diana Russini of The Athletic to start the show. Always enjoy catching up with her, one of the absolute best in the biz, just as plugged in as they come when it comes to the National Football League. But from talking to Diana, from talking to others, I really get the sense and feeling that this is going to be a really fun offseason for the Commanders. And it may not be full of super splash moves, but I do think they're going to be hard at work trying to flip this roster around. And when I say that, I don't mean it in a condescending way, right? This team won 12 football games last year. But let's be real. There are still, from my vantage point at least, a ton of holes within this roster. And still plenty of room to get better. That's the bigger thing in the way that we all should be looking at it. The quarterback masked a lot of mistakes last year, as elite players do. Now this offseason, it's about, hey, let's identify some of our weaknesses and how can we get better around the quarterback position. One of which ways you can do that is being aggressive. And I think being aggressive for Washington comes in all different shapes and sizes. I think starting with your own in-house guys, to me, is what's most important. Joel Corey, cap guru, told us that, yeah, bringing back both Bobby and Zach could cost you close to $20 million this year against the cap. That's a lot of money, but a price that I think Washington may be willing to pay. If you could only bring back one of those guys, who would it be? 1-800-636 1067 is the number. To me, I feel like I think there's a case to be made for both guys. And if I had it my way, they both would be back. But here's the honest part about this. When you think about the amount of snaps that Bobby Wagner played last year defensively, 98% of the defensive snaps, led your team in tackles. Wore the green dot. When you think about the responsibility that he had to this defense, that's great ball movement, by the way, by the Wizards. Holy hell. When you think about the importance that Bobby had to the defense, I'd have to say it's Bobby. Now, Zach meant a hell of a lot to the offense as well. I mentioned, by season's end, he was the safety blanket for Jaden Daniels. He was the guy Jaden looked to on third down in the red zone when you had to have a reception. So removing that key weapon from your quarterback, I think, is huge. So you don't want to walk away from him. That's why I say I bring both of them back. But if we had to choose one, if you could only bring back Bobby or Zach, I'd have to say it's Bobby Wagner. And it'd be tough. I think if you're Washington, you got to do everything in your power to find off ramps for both of those guys. If you are Washington, you got to do your damnedest to find an off ramp for both of those guys. Because while I want to bring them both back, you don't really have a contingency plan for either of those two. You would have liked Ben Sinnott to ultimately be your contingency plan for Zach Ertz, but we saw the way, but you saw the way that he played last year. And Logan Paulson, talking to John Kamm on the John Kamm report last week, said, look, the issues for Ben Sinnott are from the neck up. We know physically he can handle it. So, open up the phones on that. 1-800-636-1067. Joel Corey, cap analyst, longtime cap analyst, cap guru, told B. Mitch and Finley Friday that it's going to cost close to $20 million to bring both Ertz and Wagner back next year. If you could only choose to return one, who would it be? 1-800-636-1067. Brian is in D.C., wants to chime in. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, what's up, Linnell?
How you doing,
First time talking to you, man. I've listen to you for a while now. I'm not a first time caller or anything, but you just remind me of the Gladiator movie, man. Were you not entertained? I don't agree with everything you say, but you're entertaining, bro.
Yeah, I appreciate
definitely
you,
entertaining.
Man.
Yeah, so I'm going with Ertz, man. That tight end position is look around the league.
Yeah,
healthy. You know, I mean, name on, can you count on two hands the number of tight ends in the league that are top-notch? I mean, come on, man, that's hard to do. So, Wagner, I'm like, bro, throw that money in on that Chiefs middle linebacker, Nick Bolton.
Yeah, I'd love me some Nick Bolton.
Yeah,
man.
He can cover. He can't, you know, Wagner's too slow, man. I'm sorry, Wagner's a beast. I mean, he's got the know-how.
That's real.
But for that much money.
You're good, Brian. I would say that's real. I give it to you. And people don't like to hear that when it comes to Bobby Wagner because everyone's in love with the person, as you should be. He's a stand-up individual. But if you look at some of the issues Washington had last year defending the run, we continue to talk about their lack of edge presence and not getting enough out of the D tackles. Frankie Louvillo and Bobby Wagner didn't pick the right gap a lot of the times either. So both of those two guys got to get better. But I do think with Ertz, man, I can agree with you in part because of what he meant to the offense and what he meant to the quarterback. That's why I'd bring Ertz back for sure.
Exactly. That veteran savvy. I mean, you know, and then, you know, also you got I know the guy we traded our second our defense, our pass rush for, he better turn into something anyway, but that backup tight end.
But you're talking about Ben Sinnott.
Yeah. He better turn out, but he might, you know, may or may not. But I'm going to go with Peters, Newmark, Doug. You know, I'm going to go with those guys. I don't want to trade our picks. We got to trust those guys who finally have a freaking brain up in there to actually pick right and get something out of those picks. And, you know, number one is the chemistry and the team building that they've shown they know how to do. I'm trusting them. I'm not going throwing money around and let them do what they feel like they got to do to make.
For sure. Brian, I appreciate you chiming in as always, my friend. 1-800-636-1067, the number on the MGM National Harbor Listing Lounge. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. So Brian says bring back Zach Ertz. And I think y'all know I want to bring back Bobby Wagner. If we had to choose one, like I said, I get both sides of the argument. Like, you're not going to hear me talk down on somebody that wants to bring Zach Ertz back over Wagner if it came down to that. I get it. The question's got to be when you're making that decision, what does you know, Adam Peters, Lance Newmark in this front office, what do they prioritize more? What Ertz provides you offensively or what Wagner provides you defensively? Here's my last closing argument, so to speak, for Bobby. I think in terms of the impact on the team, you would feel the loss of Ertz less because I think the quarterback is good enough to find production and create production for anyone that they'd bring in at the position. So that's kind of where I stand on that. But you heard Joel Corey give you the number on what it's going to cost to bring back Ertz. So if you go out in free agency, and let's just say Gerald Everett's a guy you're thinking of, and Miami just released him, was it early last week? So he's somebody that'd be on your radar. Juwan Johnson out in New Orleans. Like, my thing is this with Ertz. Are you going to get someone that can match the production? And I know the quarterback's going to have a big part in that. But, like, Ertz may not be the most athletic guy. There is a veteran savviness that he plays with, understanding body positioning and how to cut guys off in the red zone and on those contested catch situations. That, to me, is invaluable for the young quarterback. I really do feel that way. And I look at this thing and go, man, if Daniels can't take another step without Ertz, maybe we got to look at Daniels. And I doubt that that's the case because we know what type of guy he is. So I think removing Ertz, you feel the blow a little bit less. I keep saying it about Wagner, and y'all probably are sick of me saying it. I can care less. He played 98% of the damn snaps last year. It's a lot of big-time snaps you got to replace if you don't bring him back. And then I still, to this point, don't know whether or not they have properly groomed Jordan McGee to be the guy that replaces him. Now, here's the other thing. Dre Greenlaw, Nick Bolton, as Brian in D.C. mentioned, there are options out there in free agency at the linebacker spot. So I think it would be, I want to say easier to replace Bobby, but like, there are more bodies in free agency at backer than there are at tight end. When it comes to replacing Zach Ertz, if you choose to do that, I'd have to think you're going to the free agency well or to the draft well again. And you just pulled the trigger on Ben Sinnott last year. So do you go back to that tight end well again? It's a deep group at the tight end position in this year's draft. It really is. There are a lot of talented football players that I think can come in and contribute from the get-go. You're probably not going to be in the range of a Tyler Warren or a Colston Loveland or even maybe a Mason Taylor out of LSU, but an Elijah Arroyo, a Harold Finnan Jr. from Bowling Green, two receiving tight ends that you could potentially build an offense around in the pass game. Like, that's how good those guys are. Colston Loveland, to me, is a guy that they're comparing him to Tyler Warren. And most draft gurus are going back and forth in terms of who their tight end one is. I think it's about what flavor of tight end you want. Colston Loveland more in the form of a Travis Kelce, a guy you can build your pass game around. And then Tyler Warren is in your big man rumble with football. Rawr. More if you're like Rob Gronkowski type of mold. So I think the tight end spot in this class, it's a good group. If you're Washington, can you trust one of these guys to come in and give you production in the receiving game from day one? And based on last year with Ben Sinnott, I don't know if you can rely on that. We'll see. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, let's make the case for a splash move. I told you I don't think Washington would be super aggressive in giving out a bunch of money to one guy. But if they were going to do that, if they were going to be aggressive and make a splash move, what splash move would I want to see? Your calls and my thoughts on that next during the Fan.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapper jacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 3-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, our pal Justin Mello from the Draft Network going to join us from out in India at the Combine. We'll get his thoughts on a couple of day 2 and day 3 prospects the Commanders should be looking at positions in need as we get geared up for draft season. It is, to me, the best time of year. I love the offseason always because it's fun and you get to talk to a bunch of different people. And normally it's the most optimistic you feel about your team. For years, you know, Commander fans, you know this, we looked at the offseason as a win or a loss. And there were plenty of times where we won the offseason and lost in the regular season. This time around, though, feels like we're in prime position to not only win in the offseason, but also continue to win in the regular season. At least that's how it went last year. 12 wins, punching your ticket to the conference championship for the first time since 1991. All the feels here in the DMV when it comes to the Washington Commanders. And the question is, how do they capitalize on that? One way to capitalize on that is by bringing the core of your roster back, not having too many changes in-house. Like I said, I expect them to bring back 13 of their 28 unrestricted free agents. But then outside of that, you still got to supplement this roster through free agency. And I expect them to be aggressive. It just may not be the level of aggression that we may all be anticipating, right? I don't think they give out some type of massive contract. And if they do, I think it's to a young guy at a premium position. I look at a guy like Trey Smith, the guard in Kansas City, as a guy that, you know, potentially could be in line for a big-time contract from Washington. You know, I still feel, though, that, like, in terms of tiers in free agency, I think at the positions of need for Washington, there are plenty of guys, right? Like Trey Smith is a Pro Bowl caliber guard that the Washington Commanders could bring in. There are a slew of like capable starters that Washington could bring in. Mekhi Becton potentially from Philadelphia, Patrick McCary from the Ravens, two guards potentially for Washington. I'm a big fan of Alaric Jackson out in L.A. with the Rams, former undrafted free agent, started 15 games for the Rams this year after missing the first two due to a suspension. I think he's a guy that I'd be looking to bring in at that tackle spot. There's a bunch of different guys out here that you can take flyers on. Morgan Moses, potentially, a veteran that Washington could bring back, a guy that they drafted eons ago. Will Fries, the guard from Indianapolis, is someone that I think could come in here and compete for a starting job. So it just all is going to depend, you know, on how Washington views themselves internally and how they view the draft. Because I feel like the draft, you can go get starters on the offensive line, but when you look at this free agency crop, there are a bunch of high-end backups, a bunch of borderline starters, and then you got a few, right, that I think are like real, legit, bona fide, 100% walk-in on day one as a starter. So there are definitely like a bunch of different ways that the Commanders can improve this football team. But if they choose to make a splash play, if they choose to make a splash move that potentially breaks the bank out of position in free agency, I'm curious to see which way that they would go. Now, I can make the argument, right, that, yeah, you need an edge rusher. Yeah, you need a tight end. Yeah, you need offensive line help. But in terms of spending big and splurging, like, I wonder if you're Washington, do you go hard at the offensive line spot? Because I think with the offensive line crop and the guys that we just went through, they're going to be guys looking for new homes and looking for paydays and raises. And I think Washington's got the flexibility financially to do that. In terms of a splash, right, I keep looking at two guys, and I've mentioned them several times here throughout the start of free agency if you continue to pay attention to me. Ronnie Stanley from the Baltimore Ravens and Trey Smith from the Kansas City Chiefs, to me, are two guys that I look at and go, you know what? I probably want to bring those two guys in, and I wouldn't mind breaking the bank to do so. Ronnie Stanley is someone to me that's had a questionable injury history, but, you know, I think Ronnie is someone that, when healthy, is one of the better players in the NFL at his position. There's just major question marks with the health. What type of risk is Washington willing to take in that position? That's what you got to weigh. That's what you got to look at. Another guy to me is Patrick McCary from Baltimore, who I think is super underrated. 6'4", 305 pounds, has the lower body strength that I think Washington's looking for at that guard spot. So we'll see who they end up going after. But my splash move via free agency would be go hard on the offensive line. Bring in two guys that could potentially be starters for the next 4 years. In terms of the trade, you all know which way I'm leaning. You know what I think. Do whatever you can, whether it's at St. Elmo's this weekend, whether it's at a random hotel breakfast in the lobby. Adam Peters, make the Browns give you Myles Garrett. And that would probably be the splash that I'm banging on the table for. Gotta have it, gotta have it. But if they don't, I think how they fill the defensive end spot is going to be interesting, because it's probably their biggest area of need. And I think there's really no circumstance I look at where they leave this offseason without a definitive, clear answer at that spot. 1-800-636-1067. One way Washington can address the defensive end position, if not in free agency, is via the draft. When we come back, we'll go back out to the guest hotliner pal, Justin Mello, who covers the NFL draft for the Draft Network. He joins us next and will give us his thoughts on a couple of positions of need for the Washington Commanders out in Indy at the Combine. That's next here on The Fan. Still rocking and rolling here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge, Linnell Willingham, taking you up to 10 o'clock right now. We go right back out to the Rude Guest Hotline, where we find one of the absolute best talking all things NFL Draft, about Justin Mello, who covers the NFL Draft for the Draft Network. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at JustinM_NFL. Justin, what's going on, my friend? How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you guys for having me. You know, NFL Scouting Combine is finally here. It's really the last critical event, you know, in the pre-draft process. Team's going to cross their T's, dot their I's sort of thing. So big week ahead here in Indianapolis.
Yes, it is, my friend. We kicked off the show tonight with Diana Russini. She was right outside of St. Elmo's and had Brett Veach and Andy Reid walk past her. So you know there's going to be some tea spilt, Justin, here over the next couple of days. We'll get into the X's and O's with you, my friend. I appreciate you giving us some time. Let's look at it through the lens of the Commanders here for a second. Obviously, coming off a 12-win season, you punch your ticket to the conference title game. You outkick your coverage in year one under Dan Quinn and company. When you look at, like, from your vantage point as an outsider looking in, Justin, what would you say is probably the biggest position of need for Washington as they get geared up for the NFL draft?
Well, I think they can go in a couple of different positions. You know, certainly some help at wide receiver opposite Terry McLaurin is certainly an important need entering this offseason. I know they've got some young pass catchers in the room they drafted last year, Luke McCaffrey. They've got the young tight end as well. And you're hoping to see developmental steps forward from them in year two. But definitely another need for a receiver opposite Scary Terry comes to mind. I think defensive linemen, ability to get after the quarterback off the edge. I think they've got some pretty good players there, but I certainly think there are room for upgrade. And then at cornerback as well, I think the midseason trade for Marshon Lattimore was certainly a bold risk. You know, kind of came in injured, didn't fully pay off in year one. They hope that he's going to be healthy and better next year. But I would certainly add another corner or two to that room. So entering the draft, I think for me it's receiver, a defensive lineman to play in the trenches, and then potentially another corner or two.
I'm glad you brought up the defensive line, because to me, when I've, you know, doing what I call watching tape, not to the level that you guys do, but going over some of the top prospects that you hear relative to the draft range of the Commanders, everything you hear about this defensive tackle group, Justin, is it is historic. And I know that label gets thrown around too often during this time of year, but when you look at the depth and the quality of this defensive line group, how late do you think at both edge, Justin, and defensive tackle, how late do you think you can get a plug-and-play starter here in this draft?
Well, historically speaking, on the edge, even in the deepest classes, you know, they come off the board quick. So I think the second round is probably when you're going to want to grab an edge if you don't get one in the first. As deep as the class is, I don't know how many guys you're finding in the fourth round at that point. It's, you know, 14, 15 of them will be off the board before the third round starts at edge. At D tackle, I do think you're comfortable extending that into the third round, even maybe the fourth round. There are some guys, you know, CJ West out of Indiana, Jordan Phillips out of Maryland. I got about third, fourth round grades on those guys who I think are very, very good players. But it's an incredibly deep class. It's arguably deeper on the interior even than it is on the edge. I haven't seen many people say that, but there are guys. I mean, Joshua Farmer out of Florida State is about to blow up the combine this week. There are a ton of guys. Tyleek Williams, Ohio State, probably not getting enough credit.
You know, Deion Walker. Look, you're naming all of my sleepers here, Justin. I'm a big, big Tyleek Williams fan. I think anytime you're able to show the physical maturity that he showed in that conference on a down-in, down-out basis, week in and week out, is huge. So I'm glad you brought him up. I want to ask you about one guy in particular here. I told you, man, I've been watching, but maybe not as close as the experts like yourself have been watching. Dude, have you seen a big freak move as fast as is our guy Collins, man, from Alfred Collins from Texas? That's the guy that I've kind of fallen in love with for Washington when going through this process. 6'5", 320, the hustle that he shows, chasing down screens and retracing his steps. Like, when you look at him in particular, I don't know if you've done any work on him, what type of prospect do you think he is, and do you view him as a plug-and-play guy?
I have done quite a bit of work on Alfred, and I will say he's an incredibly easy mover at his size, yes. Right? I think that's the first thing that jumps off the tape for me. And look, there's something in the water down there right now. I like the two D tackles they had at Texas last year. Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat. Look, Murphy was hurt a little, but they both had really good rookie seasons. When you turn on the tape and mm-hmm. watch what they did when they were both fully healthy, I see a similar pathway for Alfred Collins. Of course, he's on the bigger side, certainly bigger than Murphy, not quite as big as Sweat. Yeah. Not many people are, but easy movement skills. I see three down potential. Certainly a high end run stopper. You don't move him off his spot,
right?
Like that's what strikes me more than anything. But certainly a lot of upside as a pass rusher too, especially at 320 pounds. So. Certainly a big fan of his, and I think there's three down potential there.
You mentioned a local cat, Justin Jordan Phillips. I'm a big fan of him out of Maryland, and yeah, that's the inaudible noise I make as well when I watch the tape of this guy. Another guy that's got real strength and get off when he actually gets off the ball on time. I think he comes in right away, can give you some pass rush juice as well. When you watch Phillips, what kind of stands out the most with him?
Well, I thought they had a pretty good group at the Shrine Bowl this year, certainly an improved group, and he might have been the best one there. I mean, when you turn on the tape from Shrine, he was just unblockable down there in the trenches. I mean, he's got such a quick swim move. I think that's one thing that really strikes me. I see a lot, three-tech potential. You look at guys, and it's crazy to say it now, I know, because these guys were taken early, but when you watch someone like a Jeffrey Simmons, a Quinnen Williams, like these high-end three-techs, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that Jordan Phillips has that kind of upside. I was super, super impressed with him on tape. Again, I thought he was the best guy down there at Shrine. Really high-end potential. I got a second-round grade on him. I think he probably comes off the board a little later than that.
Okay.
Maybe top 100, maybe even 120 at the latest. But super, super impressive kid on film.
I'm glad you brought up the swim move, man. It's the first thing that jumps out with him, man. As soon as you cut on the tape, he's winning with the swim move. He's got a spin move that he's working a little bit as well. So just a guy that is an explosive athlete, I think, and depending on how he tests in Indy, I think he could be a guy that rises up boards. I don't know how many teams got the chance to meet with him down at Shrine, but he's someone that definitely, to me, is a high-end talent. Joined right now on the Rude Guest Hotline by our guy Justin Mello of the Draft Network. Give him a follow on the old X app at JustinM_NFL. We've picked your brain a little bit about some defensive linemen. You mentioned wide receiver. Washington kind of looking for a Robin to Terry McLaurin's Batman. When you look at some guys that could potentially be in that, round two, mid round two, late round two, early third range that can come in and start opposite of McLaurin right away, who are a couple of names that intrigue you?
Well, one of my favorites in this entire class, and it's funny, we at the Draft Network, we're dropping mock drafts every Sunday. We've been doing that since the season.
Yeah.
One of our in-house scouts sent this guy to Washington in the first round, and it might sound a little bit early, but I'm just infatuated, and it wasn't me, but I'm infatuated with him, is Jalen Royals from Utah State.
Ooh, yep.
I mean, if you were down there at the Senior Bowl, I mean, you talk about plug and play. Jim Nagy, I got to thank him. He put this kid on my radar way back in September. I reached out to the program, and we did an exclusive story on him. And then we had him again a couple weeks ago down there at the Senior Bowl. Everyone wanted to see him play against, top-end competition. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be questions coming from Utah State. Well, he blew that test out of the water, over there at the Senior Bowl. He's one of the most physical route runners in this class. I mean, he wants to get hands on you at the line of scrimmage and push you off within that contact window. And then the other aspect of his game that's so impressive is what he does in space after the catch. I mean, he's a legitimate threat to take everything he touches to the end zone. I'm infatuated with the kid. I think he'd be such a good compliment for, Terry does a lot of his damage deep down the field. With Jalen, I want to work those short to intermediate areas, get the ball quickly in his hands, let that physical skill set take over. He just overwhelms corners at the point of it, at the catch point. Some other guys coming to mind, maybe some slot only guys, like a Jalen Noel out of Iowa State. I think the short area quickness with him is incredibly impressive. I would say the same about the kid down there at Miami. I thought he was pretty good at the Senior Bowl as well. He just gets open and catches everything. if you're looking for a Z type of receiver, how about Jack Beck, you know, out of TCU? I thought, you know, what a moment for him catching the game-winning touchdown in the actual Senior Bowl game. He's just an old-school guy, right? He reminds me of a Dan Quinn type of player. Mm-hmm. He's going to line up on the boundary and block the heck out of whoever's opposite him if that's what you ask him to do. And then when it comes to playing wide receiver, he's one of the most simple evaluations in this class. I wrote down in my notes, all he does is get open and catch the football. So there are a couple of really interesting mid-round guys there. But for me, it starts and ends with Jalen Royals.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned with Royals. Do you think he is a guy that could play opposite of McLaurin on the outside? I kind of view him as like a – and bear with me here, right, as I try to use some of the smart guy's terminology, like a power slot almost, like Deebo Samuel-like. I know he's a big play waiting to happen. Do you think he has the release package and the strength on the outside to consistently beat press coverage?
I think more so from the Z position, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of off-ball alignment. Like, I think you're right in the sense where I don't see a lot of traditional X tendencies, right? He's not a T. Higgins type. He's not a DeAndre Hopkins where you're just going to line him up there to the boundary on his own, ask him to beat press man coverage. No, I picture, you know, the position that Calvin Ridley has played in recent years, especially in Tennessee this year and Jacksonville, where you kind of move him around. You try to hide him from press coverage by putting him at Z, but he could also move inside and play the slot when necessary. I think that's a good comparison for the way that he plays the position a little bit. Certainly the skill set, it's fairly different from Calvin Ridley, don't get me wrong. But you're right. I don't think there's a lot of X there, but I do think there's enough positional versatility that you're going to move him inside and you're going to play him at Z a little bit as well.
Yeah,
the flanker, if you will.
For sure, and I totally agree with your assessment of him as well. I think relative to what Washington has, he walks into your building and is right away one of your best offensive weapons. I mean, he is, you know, quite literally a home run waiting to happen. I know being a G5 guy that there's a little bit of hate on him because of the competition level, but like you mentioned, lit the Senior Bowl up. I'm excited about him, and hopefully he's someone that is – you guys mocked him in the first round, you said. I'm sorry. So what is his range, you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's not a lot of teams with many first-round grades in this class. You're talking about 13, 14, 15 of them at most. So, you know, teams in the 25 to 40 range maybe – are the ones that I would say are going to start taking a look at him. 25 to 40, I would say, most likely. But it wouldn't stun me at this point if he comes off the board in the late first receiver needy team. But surely the more common mock is in the second round.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see, man. That's why this week in Indy is so huge, man. Who knows? Jalen Royals may make someone fall in love during one of these one-on-one interviews, man. It's the beauty about the NFL Combine. I asked you about a couple of defensive tackles. Let's look at the edge rusher spot here. And there was I was doing some work last night on Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College. If he is there at 29 for Washington, do you turn the card in?
I mean, I don't see why not. I know a lot of people aren't mocking him in that range, but – I mean, 16.5 sacks this year.
Ridiculous, Justin.
It's not like he did it at a D2 program.
Right.
Like he's doing this. I remember. Do you remember about? Geez, I think we're going back 6 or 7 years now. They had another rusher there, Harold Landry.
Oh my goodness! Yes,
who had very similar production. He had one year where I think he had 17 sacks. And we overthought him as well. He didn't end up going in the first round. He went, I think it was 49th overall. Well, he signed a $90 million contract already with the Tennessee Titans, and he's essentially been a double-digit sack guy every year of his career.
And they're about the same measurables, too. That same size, same build.
Yeah, very similar length, measurables. I don't know why we overthought him at the time, and I don't know why we're overthinking this one either. I mean, and it's not like it's a bunch of uncovered sacks, and it's no, this guy is beating tackles off the line of scrimmage with pure speed and pure athleticism. He is super impressive to me. I for sure, I've got a back end first, early second round. When I talk about 8, 9, 10 edges potentially going in the first round, he's one of those guys that could sneak in there. So I'm a huge fan. Look, if he's there in the second round, it's a no-brainer for the Commanders, and I certainly think he garners some consideration there in the late first.
Well, one more quick one on Ezeraku, because he's someone I'm fascinated for with Washington. Last year we saw Dante Fowler, Justin, get 10.5 sacks, but the issue with him is you couldn't really count on him on these rundowns at 6'2", 245, 250. Do you think he's got the measurables to consistently be stout at the point of attack, setting the edge in the run game? Talk about Ezra Rocker.
Well, I think that's the big question with him, and that's part of the evaluation and why he might not be a first-round pick, right? The question is he a three-down player? Can he develop into one? I don't know that he gets there in year one. Mm-hmm. I do think it's going to be a bit of an acclimation period. Let a good, you know, strength and conditioning program get their hands on him. Maybe, you know, I think there's room on his frame to expand a little bit, probably not a ton, but I do think he can get a bit stronger and stouter at the point of attack. I don't think it's going to happen right away, and that might make him a bit of a DPR in his first year, a designated pass rusher on, you know, third and obvious downs. I don't think this guy's coming in and stopping the run, you know, with consistency on first and second down.
So one more defensive end that I want to ask you about here that I've just been crushing on, just because, one, the lower body size, and then when I watch, it just seems like he's playing at 1,000 miles an hour with his hair on fire. Nick Scorton from Texas A&M, 6'4", 280. What do you see from him? I love the one first thing that jumps out to me. You mentioned the swim of Jordan Phillips. The cross chop of Nick Scorton, I think, is one of the best in this class as well.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's been interesting talking to scouts and people around the league about him. Mm-hmm. You know, he was mocked really early in the first, especially if you go back to September, October. I mean, people were projecting him to have a monstrous season. I don't quite think it met expectations. And as the year went on, you know, we started to realize how deep this class is at the edge position. He might not even be a first rounder anymore. And if he is, I do think you're talking about in the range where Washington is picking. Again, if you looked at mocks early on, he was going 6, 7, 8, you know, 10, 11, 12 overall. I think now you're probably looking at that, you know, 20 to 35, 20 to 40 range more likely, where if he gets in there, he's going to be the, you know, the 5th, 6th, or 7th edge taken potentially. So I don't quite think it met expectations. The question on him is the traditional athleticism. Does he have the required athleticism to just line up and beat tackles with pure athleticism down by down? I think the power, he converts speed to power really well. Mm-hmm. You talked about the cross chop. That's certainly something he has in his arsenal. But I do think that, you know, teams want to see a bit more from him. And assuming, you know, he works out here in Indy, I think the results will be pretty big to determining, you know, what his ceiling is.
Justin, man, you have been absolutely awesome. I don't want to keep you too much longer, man. I know you're trying to get down and get to mingling and getting all the tea that's being spilt out there in Indianapolis, my friend. Can I ask you about the offensive line group? We skipped over that. I know trenches is going to be a huge position of need for Washington. If you can, my man, list us a couple of options for Washington at 29, talking about guard and tackle. And then I think at the start, how late you can get a starter, some potential names there on day two and day three that could potentially be plug and play.
It's fun. With this tackle class, you know, there are a lot of questions with the guys who are expected to be the first ones off the board. Mm-hmm. You know, with Will Campbell and a Calvin Banks, people are talking about them playing guard. You've got a Josh Simmons who's coming off an ACL injury. I almost like the tackle class the deeper I get into it. I feel like when you kind of remove the opportunity cost from it and you get into the late 20s and 30s, there are a lot of guys I really like. One of them being Ariante Ursary, you know, from Minnesota.
You speak my language, massive, man.
This is a massive blocker that I think is plug and play at left tackle. I really like Josh Connerly from Oregon. Yeah. I think, you know, he had that one bad rep at the Senior Bowl. It's a little ridiculous that we made one bad rep go viral. That's the way that it goes. And there are some guys that aren't being talked about. I mean, they're still big school guys, but when you get into the mid rounds, even the, you know, the third round, Ozzie Trapillo from Boston College was a guy that I thought was just so damn consistent at the Senior Bowl. Listen, teams love this kid. I've had some conversations. Okay. One team told me he's one of the most straightforward evaluations at tackle. Left tackle, right tackle, I don't care. I'm getting a good night's sleep, is what one team told me about that kid. Another one that I really like that I don't think is getting enough credit is Jack Nelson from Wisconsin. I think that's a guy, again, where it's a really, really easy, straightforward evaluation. Yeah. How about Anthony Belton from NC State? You want to talk about right tackle, the size to just overwhelm opponents at right tackle? You're talking, what, 320, 330? He's a massive, massive man. He's going to have a good week, all I'm told, as well. So I think the deeper you get into this tackle, I think you're getting a starter in the second round. And it's usually, you know, again, tackles are like edge rushers. Mm-hmm. They're such a premium position. It's rare you're going to get a guy third, fourth rounder later. You can hit on, I mean, you look like you hit on one last year in Washington and Brandon Coleman. I thought he had a great year, all things considered, with where he was drafted. But certainly you want to be taking your tackles in those opening two rounds.
I want to ask you about a guy that I actually had in my notes. You've listed a couple of guys that I've had in my notes, man. Ariante Ersery from Minnesota, 6'6", 340. I was watching him against Abdul Carter, and we know what people think of Carter across the NFL. Good reps on tape versus Carter and some bad reps, but like, how much ultimately do you think that plays into his evaluation? Because I think with his size, as you mentioned, Justin, I mean, he's a freak show.
I mean, it plays in a little bit. Like, I'll give you one example, and this is probably unfair, but a couple of years ago, I remember I wasn't very high on the tackle coming out of Ohio State, Nicholas Petit-Frere. He ended up going in the third round. I remember watching the Michigan game that year. He was just getting whooped by Aiden Hutchinson on a play-by-play basis. Yeah. Again, that's Aiden Hutchinson, not fair, but I remember thinking to myself, you know what, like, he's going to see a lot of Aiden Hutchinson's at the next level, right? Like, if you can't block him, you can't block him. And spoiler alert, he hasn't been able to block him at the next level. He had a very bad year for the Tennessee Titans this past year. So, I mean, some of that plays a little. I don't get that same vibe with Ariante Ersery. And I know Abdul Carter won the majority of those reps. When you watch the tape, I think Ersery put a lot of really good things on tape throughout the season. Easy mover at his size. I'm a huge fan. I think he's a left tackle. I see high upside starter potential at that blindside position. So, yeah, you know, you checkmarked some things on that tape. You went back and you looked at it, but I'm a big fan of the prospect. I think he earned enough goodwill throughout the year where I'm not going to base the whole evaluation on that tape. Really good football player. I think there's a chance to get a high upside starter at left tackle.
I'll let you go on this, my friend. You have been absolutely awesome. I saw it in your bio. You got some love out there for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, you guys control the draft. I mean, what happens at number one? Does this front office decide, hey, we're going to move back and be open for business? Or do they turn in the card and fulfill Jeffrey Simmons' desires of getting Abdul Carter?
Well, it's funny. You didn't even mention the possibility of a quarterback, right?
And it seems when like it's out of the question all of a sudden. But
it's crazy, right? Because when you're picking at number one overall and you don't have one, and make no mistake, they don't have one, right? Like, it's going to garner consideration. This will be their first opportunity in Indy to meet with Cam Ward in person. They met Shedeur Sanders at the East-West Shrine Bowl. They had a private meeting with him that lasted over an hour. Primetime called them on FaceTime and crashed the meeting. So I'm told that as he's known to do, right? That was an interesting one. But, you know, it feels like it's crazy that they've got five possibilities at number one, and that's almost unheard of. And all five are getting consideration, and they're the obvious, but I'll list them for you. It's Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. It's Abdul Carter. It's Travis Hunter. Or it's trade down, and you could convince me that they're going to do any of those five things, and that's crazy that we're at the guy. I mean, I think Shedeur is probably the long shot of those five, but the other four feel very much within the realm of possibility. I ultimately think they're going to be open for business. I think they're going to try to get a veteran stopgap, a Kirk Cousins, Sam Darnold might be a little too expensive. If Derek Carr becomes available, I think they would really like that. You know, the head coach, Brian Callahan, did work with him previously in Oakland. They also worked with Matt Stafford. That might be out of their, you know, possibility there. Mm-hmm. But that's something to note that he was the quarterback coach for Matt Stafford. Their head coach was with the Detroit Lions. So there are a couple of potentially available quarterbacks they have connections to. I think they're going to play the long game. Their roster is largely devoid of talent. I think they're going to try to trade
Justin,
back.
See, that's the interesting. I was the one guy outside of Tennessee, right, all this past year. I do some national radio for CBS Sports Radio, and I said, man, the Titans are my team in the AFC that's going to sneak up on people. I actually like the roster. You guys brought in my guy Sadiq Charles. He actually retires. Surprised the hell out of me with that. I thought he was a good player. The offensive line seems like it's getting built. They're good in the trenches, it feels like, on both sides of the football. They've got premium money spent at wide receiver and running back. It just feels like they're a quarterback away, in my opinion. I don't know.
I'll I see both sides of it. I'll walk one thing back. I don't think the roster is totally devoid of talent. I think you're right. I think the biggest problem, of course, it was quarterback and how much they turned over the football, but they also lack some talent at premium positions. And I think that really hurt them this year. Like, for example, they didn't have a single guy with 10 sacks. They had the third fewest sacks in the league. And then you're saying, well, they've got Harold Landry. They've got Jeffrey Simmons. They've got Devondre Sweat. What's the issue? Landry is getting up there a little bit. You know, this was his, I believe, his seventh year in the league. They don't really have an appropriate running mate for him either. So I think they're lacking a high-end number one edge. And then they don't really have an appropriate number two. It felt like they were trotting out number twos and threes this year at the edge position. And then at receiver, you know, they've got Calvin Ridley and nothing else under contract. And even Ridley, as much as I thought he was held back by bad quarterback play, he also feels like a high-end number two. You know, he's not a true number one. On the O-line, the right tackle saw it just killed them. You know, we talked about NPF earlier. He just killed them all year long. It might have been the worst starting right tackle in the NFL, in all honesty. And then they didn't really have a right guard either. So I think of you know, they've got a great safety. They've got great D tackles. They've got depth at corner. But when it came to like edge, quarterback, offensive tackle,
the premium
some of your most important, the premiums, they didn't have it. And then on the left side, I think they're in good hands, but they were young, you know, with a rookie left tackle and J.C. Latham and a sophomore left guard and Peter Skoronski. And then their center tore his Achilles, you know, the big free agency signing in Lloyd Cushenberry. So I think the premium talent is a big issue there. They, again, great safeties. They've got talent on the roster, but they're lacking it at the premium spots. And that's what killed them all year long.
For sure. Justin, first time doing this with you, my friend. We will be damn sure doing it again if you'll grace us again with your presence. You're absolutely awesome, my friend. We'll do it again soon, buddy. Enjoy Indy.
You know where to find me.
Yes, indeed. That is one of the absolute best, Justin Mello from the Draft Network. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at JustinM_NFL and read his work at thedraftnetwork.com. Final hour of power coming up here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. We'll get you an update on the Washington Wizards, plus the old Maryland Terrapins. The Crab Five is what they're calling them. I think the fellas out at College Park are primed for a big run in the NCAA tournament. How deep can they potentially go? I'll give you my thoughts next on The Fan.